Hey, Bastin, Jay and Silent Bob are coming to raid your fridge, smoke your weed, and make you laugh hysterically while they do it. How do you like them apples? Friday, October 7th at the Wilbur Theater. Catch Jay and Silent Bob get old. Grab your tickets now by clicking on the link at csmod.com. So, you're saying, yo, sir, dude, I love sir, and I want to show the world. Wear your sir love with our official t-shirts, biatch. Fishies have no eyes. Let us fuck. Jay and Silent Bob get old. The Garmy. There's also posters, action figures. There's so many to choose from. Grab your smirch at smodcast.com. Scroll down and click on Smirchandise. Catch live video clips of Jay and Silent Bob Get Old and Hollywood Babylon on the Kevin Smith blog for the Huffington Post. huff.to/Kevin Smith blog. That's huff.to/Kevin Smith blog. Yo, Red Bank, New Jersey. Jay and Silent Bob are gonna snooch to your motherfucking nooch. I don't even know what that means. Jay and Silent Bob Get Old. Live at the Count Basie Theater on October 8th. Special guest, Tell 'em Steve Dave. Tell 'em Steve Dave. Get your tickets at CountBasieTheater.org. Jay and Silent Bob Get Old. Live at the Count Basie Theater, October 8th in Red Bank. Word. Want early access to tickets for Smodcast Internet Radio's metric fuckton of live shows? Join Smodcast. For just $4.99 a month, you'll get CD quality audio of every podcast you hear on Sir, ad-free. It's like watching porn without having to fast-forward through that goddamn plot. You'll also get bonus video content and other badass exclusives. Smodcast, where Smodcast goes say for pay. All the deets at smodcast.com. Going to New York Comic Con in October? Well, Jay and Silent Bob are giving you one more reason to fangasm. You might want to clean that up. Friday, October 14th at the IGN Theater. Catch a live performance of the popular podcast, Jay and Silent Bob Get Old. Dust off that Batman costume that's three sizes too small. Or, fuck it, don't wear a costume. Just wear some type of clothing, because, you know, you don't want to get arrested. And get ready to enjoy a thick layer of gooey comedy jizz with Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes. Jay and Silent Bob Get Old, live in New York, October 14th at the IGN Theater. Tickets on sale now. For more info, go to csmod.com.
Tuesday is time to catch wreck. I'm host of the podcast that keeps you in check. I'm the relevance you need to keep you up to speed. Trust me, we the shit like a row of anal beads. Thanks to Kevin, I'm sir like Tony Hopkins to keep you informed on what's next to get it popping. Repeat what you hear and your friends think you're the greatest. You'll be an expert 3 weeks before they hate it. Fingers on the pulse, ear to the streets, mouth to the mic, JFK's on the beat. We real close now on a show you can't miss. My name is Jensen and now get up on this.
Trust your child. Boys and girls, it's Tuesday again. You are either listening live on Smodcast.com over at Kevin Smith's Sir Network, or you're listening by various different outlets like iTunes or just Smodcast.com at any time in the archives. Any of those things happen. Normally, our show is live. It's live and direct. Whatever I say has to go over the air. If I become racist out of nowhere, it will stick with me for the rest of my life. This week, on the other hand, we are recorded. I, while you listen, I'm in Minnesota. I'm at the state fair doing things that you do at a state fair, whether it's go into a jalopy haunted house or eat fried bananas or have unlimited milk. They have unlimited milk.
A jalopy haunted house?
It's just a shitty...
Is it a haunted house with an old car theme?
Yes. Weirdly, it is. That's our guest, Jesse Thorne, who we're happy to have this week here on the podcast. You know him from APR, from American Public Radio, NPR, also known as. You've been
This is a disaster. This is disastrous.
Can I kill myself?
You should put write these things down. Public Radio International, PRI. You mixed up the two that I'm not on. There are three public radio networks. The two that I'm not on, you combined into one powerful Voltron-like.
Okay. Are you on Sirius XM?
I am on Sirius
XM. Oh, fuck, because I was trying to find more that you're not on.
I'm on XM Public Radio. All right. XM PR.
Are you on Kiss FM here in L.A.?
Yeah, sure.
The Seacrest one?
Yeah, of course. I'm Ryan Seacrest. Did you not know that?
You're out.
Yes.
Thank you so much, man, for coming, Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, no problem.
No, I mean, I know you basically from The Sound of Young America, but...
Public radio host, comedy podcast host.
Yes.
Men's style blogger.
Which I love as well. I got into that after you were on my last podcast, The Hype Men.
And you, as I recall, described me as being dressed like a plantation owner from the Old South.
Nothing is
more inspiring.
I know, and you being such
I gotta check this guy's stuff out.
He has a fashion blog. I want to know what early racism looked like.
Tell me more about string ties.
So welcome back, Jesse.
That's the kind of tie that Colonel Sanders wears. Yeah. If you don't know what that is.
That's the thing, is your style is so distinct. My girlfriend, who met you when you came to the house to do the old podcast, loves your style. Loves it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, she's a very pretty lady, and most of them like me more than you.
They do. I know. I'm lucky in my own right. But this is a new show for me. What we normally do is we do it live. We're doing this taped, so I can take out all that stuff about coming up with the wrong radio station.
Good. Excellent.
I won't, though.
Jensen, I need to address one thing about this new show, because when you start a new show, you make a series of choices. I think you agree.
Sort of approach.
To some extent, you're feeling your way through, but before you get started, you're making some picks. You're deciding which way to go.
Yeah.
You were thinking about, okay, I want to make some theme music for my show.
Yes.
This is going to be some music that... Everyone is going to look forward to listening to every week some music that each week is going to remind my listeners what the show is all about and why they love it.
Yes.
I should put the image of shit on anal beads in their mind.
Well, here's the thing. I had to keep two things in consideration, because normally I haven't rapped like that for a long time.
Yeah.
Like, unless I'm on Funny or Die or something. Like something that's obviously satire. I haven't rapped like normally in quite some time. So Kevin is a big fan of the fact that I had a past life in this. So like when I was on his show recently, he made me freestyle, which I haven't done in a million years. And then on top of that, he has a crowd that's used to his humor. So I thought shit like anal beads is in the Kevin Smith canon. You know what I mean? And it's better than jalopy haunted houses.
Yes, that's true.
Let's at least agree on that.
That's true. It's coherent.
Yeah.
Mostly coherent.
Well, I only like mostly. So basically what we do on the show, if you're just tuning in, is we talk about things that are hip, up and coming, about to break the mainstream. But this week, it's a little different. This week, we're going to take something that has been in pop culture for the last month, and now we're going to dissect it and analyze it like only two nerdy white kids can, which is we're going to take it track by track, and we're going to look at Kanye West and Jay-Z's collaborative effort called Watch the Throne, which is a CD or whatever they call them now. I guess it would be an album since there's no physical CD anyone's buying. But this is an album.
It's the hot new cylinder.
That's right. The hot new cylinder that everybody in music is talking about. It's breaking records as far as downloads.
Everyone from Edison to Tesla.
All of them. Marconi talks about it all the time. everybody's speaking about
it. Marconi.
And basically what we're going to do is we're going to catch you up to speed on each song, what you should know about. So when people are talking about it, you have a leg to stand on.
Yeah, if you're not the kind of person out there who's hip on all the Deutsche Grammophon releases.
Right. If you don't know about the newest RCA release, we're going to tell you about it, and we're going to do it in a very precise, analytical way. We're going to go track. We're going to have some guests join us.
Big time guests
to help us, and even some that might be able to tell us about some things that went down with the records that were made, which is pretty cool. And then something at the end that some of you hip hop nerds might rejoice. But we are going to start by breaking down each song, as I said, track by track. And we're going to start with the first song on the record. First, really quick, Jesse, you bought this the day it came out?
Yes, I bought it.
Whatever
the day
you
it
did,
came
yeah.
out.
Well,
yes.
You downloaded it the day it came out. Was
yes.
this something you were excited about? The two biggest names in hip hop collaborating on one project.
I think everyone in the people that hate rap music were kind of excited about it,
yeah.
right? I mean, this was the musical event of the year.
That's like, what I would think.
There's, it's straightforward. There are no other huge stars as huge as these two guys. In any musical
music
era.
Yeah,
these are the two of the top five biggest stars in music.
Yes.
Making a record together. And I happen to be a big fan of both of them.
Me too.
I mean, they have their detractors, but I am sincerely, unapologetically a huge fan of both. So I was very excited.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So we're going to get into it. We're not going to waste any time here. The first song is called No Church in the Wild. A couple notes. We're going to listen to it. While we're talking, and then we hope to have a guest for this one. But this song is called No Church in the Wild. It is produced by Kanye West and 88 Keys. It's featuring, Odd Future collaborator, I guess member Frank Ocean, who's basically the new hip R&B name to know. He's actually twice on the record, which we'll get to later. Another feature I'd like to do for this podcast is tell you how many writers there are per song, since Jay-Z and Kanye seem to like to ask everyone to come in and give their input.
Well, they have.
As well as samples.
You end up with seven different producers,
yep.
a couple of just ladies that they needed something to give them so
yeah.
they could make out with them.
Yep, yep.
Making out is what I presume they do with ladies.
Rappers do that.
And then, yeah, every sample, they get writing credits. So if you sampled the drum solo from a song, all
Anything.
Four of that song's writers get credit.
Everybody from Sly and the Family Stone has to have their name on it as a writer.
Greg Errico.
Right. So here we go. This song has 10 writers, which is insane. So this first song is called No Church in the Wild. Let's cue it up. We'll let it play out for a little bit, and when we feel things, we'll jump them out, play about a minute of it.
Sure.
So this starts the record, guys, so pretend you like hip-hop.
Human beings in a mind. What's a mind to a king? What's a king to a god? What's a god to a non-believer?
So that's Frank Ocean.
Tears
on the mausoleum floor, blood stains the Colosseum doors, lies on the lips of a priest, Thanksgiving disguised as a feast, rolling in the Rolls Royce Caniche, only the doctor's got this, I'm hiding from police. Cocaine seats, all white like I got the whole thing bleached. I'm wondering if a dove's prayers reach. It's pious, pious, who God loves pious. Socrates asks, who's biased, do y'all seek? Off Plato, Screech, I'm out here.
I like to think he means Screech from Saved by the Bell.
Screech.
Hope for the Holy Ghost, get the hell up out your seats. Preach.
Human beings in a mind. What's a mind to a king? What's a king to a god?
All right, let's bring it down, Alan. So we don't, you know, you should listen to the whole album on your own. We just want to give you small snippets so we can remember as well.
If this is your way of yeah. listening to the album, you're really going to get a sort of a half-assed experience.
You don't want that. Listen to the record also, but then, first listen to the record, then listen to us. But first, this is one of my highlights from the record.
Yeah,
I don't have a. I mean, I'm not going to spoiler alert here. I have a bunch of highlights, but a lot of lowlights on the record as well. But this, as soon as I turned it on, I was sort of like, okay, I'm in for the ride a bit. And I'm a Frank Ocean fan. Are you a Frank Ocean fan?
You know, I was listening to the local hip hop radio station recently, and mm-hmm. Frank Ocean's hot single Novocaine came on, and it is such a relief in the current hip hop lineup.
R&B, yeah.
It's a sort of. It's this that LMFAO song they play like four times an hour, and
we're gonna have to talk about them, by the way, in a little.
It is just execrable. Like, it is as bad as a song could be.
It's
and
horrible.
The Frank Ocean song is kind of odd. It's sort of aimless,
almost no structure.
It's beautiful and has a tremendous sense of mood, and it's amazing to hear it on the radio. And I feel in part the same way about his contributions to this record. Like, there's. He really has a distinctive aesthetic that shines through in a really strong way. And there, you know, there hasn't been especially a male R&B singer in quite some time that really has done something distinctive.
Not since D'Angelo.
Yeah.
And you could argue Maxwell, but I don't think you can. I think D'Angelo is probably the only, the only distinctive R&B voice in a while has been this Frank Ocean thing. And to have him on two records here on Watch the Throne on two songs, obviously, Jay-Z has some confidence and Kanye has some confidence in Frank Ocean that Def Jam does not.
Yeah.
Frank's record label and him have been going back and forth. He has one of the hottest records in the world and yet can't release an album. They didn't trust him until he had this Novocaine song, and I don't think he's ever going to release a record on Def Jam. They're eventually going to have to figure something out because he's incredible.
Yeah.
I think they pulled his full record, Nostalgia, off free download, getting ready to put it back out on iTunes, so keep an eye out on that. This song, to me, I put down some notes. This, like most of the record, seems to be an anthem for debauchery.
It's not the kind of debauchery on this record in general. I think this song is the first song for a reason, not just because it is a strong song, but I think it's in some ways kind of a thesis statement for this record.
Yeah.
Which is just like in Frank Ocean's song Novocaine, it's about a kind of odd alienation, and Novocaine is just about an alienation from relationships,
right?
But this song, and to some extent this record, I think, is about an alienation from everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that chorus is about not knowing anything to believe in. It's like nihilistic.
Totally.
Except that it doesn't even believe in the here and now.
And in the weirdest way, this record is littered with religious talk. Littered. The whole thing almost has, and I wrote, it has almost like a Scorsese vibe.
But it's
this song more than anything, which is like religious icon, imagery, to almost mix with this sort of like waif model lifestyle of living, this like private jets and most likely drugs at the party and really famous people all around you all the time, but almost feeling nothing.
This is kind of a post cocaine rap album.
It really
is. In a very different way than,
yeah.
You know, you might just think, oh, it's the rap that comes after cocaine rap, which we may remember is about selling cocaine.
Still love that too.
But this is sort of about what it's like to live after you've done a bunch of cocaine.
Yeah.
Not when you're high on cocaine,
but when
you've done so much cocaine that it doesn't really work anymore and you're dead inside.
Yeah, this is when you find yourself at that guy's house in Boogie Nights that has like the little boy doing the fireworks in his room. This is like the saddest part of cocaine.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I felt from the record, almost the whole record, but this song, for sure. Some irony in the song is that there's an auto-tuned bridge, in a Jay song, which is funny to me, because he's killed it already. But Kanye, this is the first time on the record that you feel that this is really a Kanye album that Jay-Z has done a lot of features on.
Well, I think the whole sort of, the melodic aesthetic is the sound of the album is very contemporary Kanye West. It's very much that kind of electrified, vaguely distant, very melodic sadness that has characterized his work in the past 3 years or so.
And how long does Kanye get to be sad?
I don't know. That's an interesting question.
It's the Eminem argument too.
I was just thinking about this as I was listening to this album. I was thinking I'm old enough. I recently turned 30. I'm old enough that when I think of Kanye West and Jay-Z, I think of H to the Izzo, which is like one of the happiest rap songs ever.
It's a Michael Jackson sample.
Like it is.
Jackson 5 at that.
It liberally samples maybe the most joyous pop song of all time.
Yeah.
I Want You Back by the Jackson 5. And the Jay-Z portion of it is essentially a call to arms. It's like, everyone come with me.
Yeah.
It's still him presenting himself as the king of everything, mm-hmm. but it's the king of everything in the sense that I'm the king of all of us together.
Yeah.
And what's interesting to me about this whole record is that there is almost no all of us on this record.
No. He's almost asking you not to follow him now.
Yeah.
I feel like he's almost warning you. I had you follow me, now it might be time to back away.
Yeah.
And that he actually says that at certain points later in the record. We are going to be able to get a guest in here, which is going to be the co-producer of this song. I like to just say the producer of this song, which is going to be 88 Keys, who I have been a fan of for a tremendous amount of time from Death of Adam and even before that from his work on Mos Def's records. But, we're going to talk to him about what it's like to, produce a song on this Kanye West Jay-Z album. When we had him on Hype Man, we kind of attacked him a little. and just were saying, why hasn't Kanye put you on the album? We know they're best friends. He's flown out to Hawaii to work on a couple Kanye records, wondering why he wasn't working on it. He had this up his sleeve. So
you attacked him on that point.
We did a little.
Hey, how come your more famous friend hasn't made you more famous?
We were giving
you
him,
asshole.
We were giving him the business. So let's talk to 88 Keys. 88 Keys, man, you there?
Yeah, it was good.
What's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. I'm about to go run over to my air conditioner and turn it off real quick so I could.
That seems not like something you're gonna. That seems like something you're gonna do just with your hand. Like what's going on in general? Like, are you going? Like what's going on in your life? Are you? I mean, listen, man, you have a song. You have a song
right now. I'm picturing 88 Keys on whatever the contemporary equivalent of TRL is,
right.
And you know whatever the contemporary equivalent of Carson Daly.
106 and Park.
What are you up to? And he goes like, oh, I don't know. My leg's itchy, so I'm scratching that.
Yeah. Hey, you asked.
I did ask. You're right. You make a good point. 88 Keys, I'm so excited to have you on the show. We've been friends for quite some time. You were on our Hype Man show. We got in a little bit of a tassel last time talking about how you should be on a Kanye West album. You guys are friends. You've influenced him. You've worked together on things, but yet never listed as a producer in a song. And here we are with No Church in the Wild on Watch the Throne.
Six Times a Charm.
Six Times a Charm. He got it in there, which is the best thing, no matter how long it took. Tell me about how this came about. I mean, tell me the story about you ending up on this record.
Well, it's a funny story. But you want the full long-winded 88
no,
version?
No, we want the air conditioner needs a lot of work version, a little shorter.
Okay, cool. Right. So, I was basically on my way home from the Apple Store. I went to go check Just Blaze and Saigon perform at the Apple Store.
I remember that.
And my wife and I, we actually, just had a bit of a tiff like the night before. So I was like, after the Apple Store, I was just gonna go home. Just Blaze and Saigon, they invited me to dinner to celebrate. Initially, I said yeah. Then I thought about my wife. I was like, you know what? I'll catch you guys later.
Okay.
So I'm at the subway station and I'm at the foot of the staircase. And as I'm about to go down, I realize, hey, you know, I'm in Kanye's neighborhood, you know, where he lives in New York. So
sure.
I sent him an email just to say, you know, I told him I was, you know, if he's around, and you know, I just stopped by for a few minutes to say what's up. He's like, yeah, I'm at the studio. So I go over there. Don C walks me up. And, you know, I see like all the heads and stuff over there. And then, Don's like, well, you know, Kanye's in the meeting right now. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll wait a few minutes or whatever. And he was like, nah, you know, he wants you to come into the meeting. I was like, all right, cool. So I walk in the door and, there's Kanye, Jay-Z, Q-Tip, no ID. Yeah.
President Obama is there.
Oprah.
Yasser Arafat. The late Yasser Arafat.
Alive Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. Which is amazing.
Why. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Pac.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
You know, No ID and Noah, the engineer, Noah Goldstein. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so I dapped everybody out and, you know, and I told him when I was like walking in, I'm like, yo, I'm only here for like, you know, next 5-10 minutes or whatever. I just came to say what's up.
Sure.
So then they started playing songs from the record that they've made thus far. Everything sounds really dope. I mean, it's pretty much what everyone's heard now.
Yeah.
You know, they were discussing the record and stuff like that. So about 25 minutes goes by, and I'm like, man, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'm just sitting here like a bump in a log. I'm about to be out. So I get up and I tell Kanye, like, yo, I'm about to leave. And he's like, all right, cool. He's like, oh, well, you know, do you have any beats on you? And the thing was like,
so crazy.
I wasn't there to shop beats. Like, actually, I haven't been shopping beats in a while because of, you know, there's several reasons, but one of the main reasons is because I just started my own record label and I'm on the verge of signing 5 artists. So this day and this session and me arriving there came 2 days after I realized that I no longer have to be a slave. I no longer have to be a slave to the industry where, you know, in order for me to get paper, I gotta like, you know.
Sure, you do it on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to have other people. You don't have to pass through other people's gates.
No.
Yeah. You know, so I'm like feeling like elated, liberated that, you know, I finally realized that I should have started my own label.
Sure.
Stuff like that. So, So he's like, you know, do you have any beats? I'm like, nah, not really. And then he gave me the come on, man, look. Like, come on, man.
Right.
Like, come on, man. You're in the room with me.
Yeah, you're in an Illuminati meeting.
Yeah, you know.
That's,
you know, goat blood and all.
That's when Vladimir Putin spoke up.
And he said, do you have beats? And he said, give me those beats. And then you play. So then you played him stuff?
Yeah, like, I wound up remembering, you know, that I use SoundCloud. Like, I'm like the SoundCloud king.
I know, so, you're like paid by them. I know. But you're not. But you should be paid by them.
I wish.
I know.
SoundCloud, y'all hear this?
I know.
So I grabbed the, like, Noah, he gives me his computer, the engineer, and I pull up my SoundCloud, and I started skipping through the last beat tape that I made, which was, I believe, I made it last year. It's called Eat Good, Shit Good.
Okay.
And it only went out to, like, you know, people who were in the industry or people who had budgets.
Yeah.
More or less. Like, you know, drug dealers welcomed.
Yeah.
You know, so I played a few joints from there, and like the reaction that I got was kind of crazy. Like, they were like really digging it. So they wound up picking about 4 beats out of maybe like 10 beats that I played from there. And then they were like, yo, you know, do you have any more? So I was like, I was like, yeah, sure, I guess. But I really didn't. So I started playing.
So I started playing Timbaland beats that I had.
Yeah, you know, I started playing like Timbaland instrumentals.
Yeah,
I started playing like stuff from unfinished projects that I was working on for myself as a solo artist.
Sure,
You know, I have a project that I've been working on, an EP rather, called Adamantium.
Mm-hmm.
So I played some of that stuff, and they picked 2 from there. One of which became No Church in the Wild.
Okay, so Church in the Wild was originally a song that you saw fitting on your solo record.
Yeah, for my solo EP called Adamantium. Yeah.
Okay. Good, man. Keep going.
Yeah. That's exactly what they said. Keep going.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, my thing is like, you know, at this time I was like, man, you know, like, cause Q-Tip left like right before Kanye asked me to, you know, if I had anything on me. So I was like, man, I wish Tip was here so he could hear like my new stuff.
Yeah. Cause you've worked with Tribe Called Quest before in the past, right?
Nah, I was just like, they're groupie.
But you were around the scene.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I've known Tip since I was 15, 16 years old. You know, so then I started playing stuff from my unfinished mixtape that I've been working on also called the Alpha Program version 2.1.
See, no matter how unfinished it is, you always come up with the title first, and that's always my favorite part of your projects.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually,
Kanye was the same way, by the way.
My favorite part of your projects, by the way, is the music.
I like the titles.
In contrast to my friend Jensen.
I'm a huge 88 Keys fan. He knows that.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I conceptualize it first, and then I get to work to try to like put the pieces in and stuff like that.
So he takes the beat. I mean, do you not hear it again until you hear the two masters of rap on it? I mean, were you involved during the process, or was it something that came back to you?
Oh, no. From that night, I was there like almost every day in the studio. Sometimes upon request, sometimes like I just felt like, let me just, stick around and, you know, hang out with my boys. With my friends and make sure I'm like on the scene and visible. So, you know, if they ever need anything else or they want me to track anything else, like, you know, I'm available.
Right.
So, yeah. So,
plus you just go in there and like Tony Bennett is sitting there. The late Judy Garland is there.
Yep. You got, we know where Gaddafi's hanging out.
Sure.
Where
absolutely.
He's hiding. Yeah, we have Saddam's corpse.
Former Canadian Prime Minister John Major is there.
He's there, which is crazy. John Mayer is there.
Sure.
John somebody. I can't believe I can't come up
Tony
with
Tony Danza
John.
Is there.
Tony Danza, because he's the boss.
Sure.
He's hanging out.
Frank Stallone.
I don't know why he'd be there.
He's a musician.
Oh, good point. So you're involved the whole time. Does you feel like this was the best song from what they picked? Was this the best one? Do you agree?
As far as tracks from myself?
Yes.
For me?
Yes.
No.
So you think there are ones with recorded verses on it that are better songs than this?
I mean, I don't know if they if they recorded verses.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we started working on 2 songs. So out of those six,
two moved on to songs?
Well, actually, they picked about 13 beats.
Okay.
And they picked 13 beats. Two, they started working on like immediately. So by the time, like the next afternoon when I was asked to come back to track the beats, like Mike Dean and Kanye had already put some ideas down on the second beat that no one's heard yet.
Okay. And Mike Dean, we should explain, yeah, is also a legendary hip hop producer who's worked as sort of a sideman for Kanye the past few years, playing, adding keyboards and.
Yeah, which almost to an extent is kind of weird.
Yeah, like, Mike Dean's history predates Kanye's career.
He's even
more of a veteran.
Yeah, the new era of hip hop is not Mike Dean's thing. He's more well known for his Houston, his Rap-A-Lot stuff. That's why I knew him.
Sure.
Yeah.
And this project and a bunch of Kanye projects in the past, he's sort of become Kanye's right hand.
Yeah.
As he's brought in as a mix engineer, I believe he mixed Guess Who's Bizak.
Oh, okay.
Or Back. Is it called Bizak? No, Guess Who's Back.
Yeah, Guess Who's Back, I think.
Yes.
Man. Yeah.
That's a great song.
That is a great song.
Oh man, that song's so good.
That song is good. What now? I mean, are these songs that you can tell me, we're friends here. Is this something that we were fighting for back in Hype Man days? Are you sending your beats directly to these people now? Is this something, are you in the fold, one might call it?
This is the music industry. This is like the hip hop music industry. So, you know, everything is kind of left up in the air. But, I was told, by Kanye himself that, you know, he feels that my beats got really, 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 really good. Like since the last time he heard, my beats and he's looking for us to do like a lot more. Well, I shouldn't say a lot, but he's looking for us to do more work together.
It must be hard to be in that position where, you know, this is number one, this is your friend.
Yeah.
And many of these people are your friends, but there's also these huge amounts of money going into these projects, which is great because 13 of your beats get bought.
Right.
But then on the other hand, only one of them ends up on the record. It must be a hard sort of minefield to navigate, not just like, you know, you're getting paid for doing your work, but sort of emotionally, it must be hard to like be in that position.
Not at all. Actually, like, to kind of like go back, like the 13 beats were chosen, and I tracked out, you know, 13 beats, which I know I probably normally wouldn't do for anybody else,
unless it was the biggest record of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, like with everything else, like, you know, anybody else, I'd make sure like the business is like handled, you know, just taken care of before I track beats out or whatever.
Sure.
But, he's my best friend. And, like good music is like, they're like my family. Like, you know, I'm like the cousin to the Grammy family. So, you know, even down to Jay, like, I mean, I'm not cool with Jay where it's like, I got his number and I'm calling him like every weekend, like, hey, so how's the South of France?
Don't worry. Those don't end up in good positions either. Like Beanie Siegel and Memphis Bleek used to be those guys. So don't worry anymore.
You know, by the way, if you're wondering what the answer is, the South of France is temperate.
this guy. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I've known Jay since, I want to say like 2001, where, mm-hmm, you know, I was kind of like brought into like the whole Rockefeller family. So the beats were chosen and I tracked them out because it's them. But, you know, as far as like the business actually being taken care of, like so far is the one song, No Church in the Wild. And, like the three engineers who worked heavily with, you know, that project, as well as like work with Kanye and I believe they worked on the Blueprint 3.
Yep.
Together. Like they all feel pretty confident that, you know, my beats, the other beats that were tracked out will probably wind up popping up on the next Kanye album, the next Jay album, and quite possibly the next Throne album.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm hoping for all that, but you know, I just know anything can happen, you know, you know, they can all have a change of heart or a change of mind, like, you know, just with the change of times. But,
well,
you know,
88, it's a great start with No Church in the Wild. We were talking before you got on. We love the song. It's really a great intro to the record. It's almost, Jesse had called it the thesis of the record. And it just sounds great. And I was so happy to see your name on there, man. I'm a huge fan. And if you haven't, if you're listening and you haven't picked up Death of Adam or any of the stuff in the past that 88's been involved in, you got to. It's great stuff.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, like I wound up staying in that studio session for about like a good 2 hours, you know, and you know, and after like I kind of ran out of beats to play or whatever, or after, you know, Jay was like, "Well, that went well for you."
Yeah.
I was like, "Yeah, you think?"
That's no, great.
And then, yeah, and then they were like Jay and Jay, they were discussing how, or they were like, you know, just saying in the room how, you know, my that song was what they need, or my element, like the elements of my beats were what was needed for the project.
Incredible,
you know, and that felt good, but you know, like I didn't think that it was gonna go down until other elements and other things started to like present itself like throughout the days.
Well, good, man. Well, we're so happy to have had you on this and to talk about your experience for No Church in the Wild. And like I said, man, we'll have you back on when you show up on the next record, like you said. And it's a great start, and we're stoked to have you, man. Thanks so much.
Cool, man. Thanks for having me.
Take care. 88,
it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm a big fan.
All right, likewise, man.
Take care. Bye.
Peace.
All right, so we're going to move on to the next song, which we might not have as happy praise for as we did the last one.
This Let's song, take a listen.
This one's just a shitbox. This one's called Liftoff. It's produced by Kanye, Jeff Basker, and Mike Dean, which is obviously a name you've heard already, but will show up throughout this whole podcast. This features Beyonce, which you may have heard of, and this features five writers. A lot of things we should talk about in this song, but first let's listen to a little bit. Not too long. Exactly. Nah.
Just a little bit.
Let's just barely touch on
just
this.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
All engine running.
Do we even have to go to the rap part?
I just want to get it 2 seconds in, and then I want to cut it. In case you guys haven't figured out, this song is about space. If they can't hit you over the fucking hammer, over the head with a hammer. All right, let's cut it. Okay, here's the thing. Let me break down some things before we get into it. We're going to go over this one fast. Additional production from Q-Tip and Don Jazzy. Additional programming. Remember, they like bringing everyone into the studio. Mike Dean, who we've already said is the producer. Why he needs more additional programming, I have no idea. Anthony Kilhoffer and Hit Boy, but more importantly, LMFAO, who also has mixing credits on this song. Makes me want to die. You hear it in the song. Additional vocal credits are incredible, one of them being Mr. Hudson, the other one being Seal.
Like, wait, what is Seal doing on that?
I don't know, but he is credited, and he had to get his clearance through his record label.
You know what it is? It's the...
It's with his voice.
It's the horn. Yeah, he's singing the horn part.
It's amazing.
Interestingly, the Jefferson Starship also on that song.
Yeah, it's very strange that five writers, but it seems like 7 million people.
Sticks are on that song.
Everybody's in that. So here's what I need to talk about.
Greg Orico from Sly and the Family Stone on that record.
Just, everyone we know is on that. My parents are on this song.
Sure.
Okay. So here's some things. This song is just an obvious space shuttle thing. I mean, they were like, let's do a song, Liftoff, and they had the hook. And then they were like, let's just use horrible metaphors, use a vocal sample of a liftoff, of a shuttle liftoff. The song is out of place on the record, especially coming off the 88 Keys, Kanye vibe of the first song. This felt like Judd Apatow putting Leslie Mann in Funny People. Like, it felt like he had to, and it made the movie worse.
Now, I thought Leslie Mann was great in Funny People, so I'm not gonna agree with that premise. But it does feel like they were listening to the record, and they're... gosh, what does this need? Ah, yes, another thing.
Yeah, more things. Beyonce's hook is completely forgettable. Kanye singing, I hope I can forget it. There's a part where Kanye sings in it, and it's just back to his 808, the bad parts of 808. There are some good parts. I'm not going to shit on that record fully, but the worst parts come out in this. Jay-Z is forced on this song to a point where he's almost not on it. I felt like he felt the brick coming and was like, you guys do this one, and walked away. There's a beat switch. around 3 minutes and 30 seconds, I actually kind of liken this song. It's the one part that I was like, oh, I like this.
It's interesting that even the naked pop song, and to their credit, even the naked pop songs have weird experimental aspects.
Exactly. And I think that's the John Bryan influence that Kanye's worked with before from all the Paul Thomas Anderson movies, the correct Paul Thomas Anderson. That he gets that from, but this song is obviously their attempt at radio, and it will not, I don't think, take
no, this
radio.
Is a this is a solid wood brick.
This is a wood brick.
This is wood in the hood, my friends.
Yeah, it's just not good. This is the worst one on the record. We got it over early.
What's weird, I want to say one thing about this, which is that Beyonce is kind of humane and has a beautiful voice and can really sing. And it is so out of place in this record.
Awful.
The melody is so out of place in the context of the rest of the song.
It's awful.
It is a really shoehorned in fit, and it's weird because Beyonce is so present and not disaffected and alienated that it's like she's on a different song. She's, the melody is weirdly disaffected and alienated for a song about triumph and rockets lifting off.
This record should have hooks the entire time by the corpse of Rick James. This should not have Beyonce. This, like you said, is the effects of cocaine. This is a post-TMZ era of anger and depression. This does not
Rick
have
James
that.
Is a good example because there's a guy who can make a song about being disappointed that he's too drunk to beat his girlfriend.
Exactly.
A hit.
It will look good, though, when they bring it live. And she has the wind machine. This is a wind machine song. I don't know if you know.
And she's a beautiful woman.
She is. Every time she comes out, she's got that wind machine. This will look good with the wind machine, but it's not something you should listen to. And that's as much attention as I want to give it.
I'm thinking about the wind machine.
You should. This next song, we can't technically say the title, which is one of the reasons we're going to have a guest. But
I was imagining the same thing. We had a guest that canceled at the last minute who was in charge of saying the N-word in case we needed. Also, insights. I mean, he would have brought
funny.
Some insights.
We
a very
Brandon,
funny man.
Unfortunately, Brandon Johnson from NTSF couldn't make it because he had a callback, but he was one of the people we wanted to say this title, but instead we have to say it's N-Words in Paris. That's not the title on the thing, but that's what it's called. It's produced by Hit-Boy and Kanye West. This has five writers.
Uh-huh.
It's co-produced by Mike Dean. To give you the literal sense of the title, it was recorded in Paris. It was mixed back at the studio, which they've been doing all their things at the Mercer. And it's important to get this song right from the start. So we're going to listen to N-Words in Paris.
Ukulele by Don Ho.
We're going to skate to one song only. So hard, motherfuckers wanna find me. First niggas gotta find me. What's 50 grand to a motherfucker like me? Can you please remind me? Ball so hard, this shit crazy. Y'all don't know that don't shit phase. And as we go, 0 for 82 when I look at you like this shit crazy. Ball so hard, this shit weird. We ain't even broke, be here. Ball so hard, since we here. It's only right that we be fair. Psycho, I'm libo, to go Michael. Take your pick. Jackson, Tyson, Jordan, game six. Ball so hard, got a broke clock. Rollies that don't tick-tock. All the Mars that's losing time. Hidden behind all these big rocks. Ball so hard, I'm shocked too. I'm supposed to be locked up too. You escape, but I escape. You be in Paris getting fucked up too. Ball so hard, let's get faded. Lobberies for like 6 days. Gold bottles.
So I didn't even want to talk over it.
I know.
It's so good. It's so good.
You know what? Here's one thing that you can't forget about this record.
Yeah.
Jay-Z is real good at rapping.
He's so good at rapping.
He's very good at it.
He is just the best. Couple things before we bring in a very special guest. Blades of Glory vocal samples. There's two of them in the song.
was a little odd.
A little odd.
It's a little out
they
of place.
Seem to like Will Ferrell.
Totally out of place.
Yeah, I didn't even like the movie. But it does sort of have a weird thing where, to overanalyze it, this is obviously not why they use the Blades of Glory vocal samples, but it is black stadium music. This is the first time you can say that, I think, that this is black arena music. And Blades of Glory is ice skating, whatever. It's in an arena. It was a reach.
Okay, that's the correction.
It was a
that's
reach.
The connection.
Was
I was trying to put it together in my head.
It was
failing.
A reach. But it is black stadium music, which you don't hear much. My small thing that I can give on almost a perfect song to me, not for me my favorite song of the record, but the consensus is the best song of the record.
I think it's the song that takes the theme of the record. There are bits and pieces of the record that are all over the place.
Yeah.
But it's the song that takes the thing that this record is and does the best job
Perfects
of it.
It. Exactly. Exactly.
It actually does kind of jam.
It does. It's just, it's great. Jay's flow, the one argument I could say is that it does make him sound his age a little, which isn't bad. It's a good critique, but the truth is it does sound sort of like Jason Nevins chopped it up and put his verse in it, which is fine. It sounds great. It's just, sometimes I think that he is more comfortable in the boom bap of rap, and that isn't what he's doing in
this
song.
Well, the thing that's special about Jay-Z as a rapper is that he can make something that is truly remarkable sound effortless.
Yeah.
And the best case scenario is something like his verse on this song, I think, or I think H to the Izzo is actually a pretty decent representation of that, where it can, something that feels effortless, you just feel like you're being transported effortlessly along with him.
Yeah.
The downside of that is that sometimes when it's not working, it could just be boring. Or he could sound like he's trying too hard.
Which was American Gangster in my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's bring in an amazing guest. This is going to be a big thing for us. This is someone who knows the world of making songs with Jay-Z. That's for sure. He's featured on Big Pimpin'. But more than that, he is an absolute hip-hop legend from the Underground Kings, UGK. This is our friend and friend to everyone, Bun B. Bun, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty good, sir. How about yourself?
Dude, we are honored. I'm here with Jesse Thorne. We are going track by track on this Throne record, and we are honored to have you come on here and give us your thoughts on a record we can't actually say.
We can't say the name of it. We are, you probably can't tell from our voices, but we are white men.
Stop it.
Yeah, I know. I'm blowing minds in podcast land.
Yeah, I don't know if you know. We're technically not allowed to say the title.
Believe it or not, I am a white public radio host.
It's really,
isn't that weird?
I have a Prius, which.
This is like Stephen Colbert. Like, the only reason you know you're white is because you hang with Jensen. Is that right?
No, Jesse gives me a run for my money. He gives me a run for my money. We both were obviously influenced by hip hop growing up, but there is no way, shape, or form that Melly Mel or anyone who created hip hop said, you know what should happen? These two dudes should get really into hip hop. We're like the exact opposite.
Hey, now hold on. Yeah. Hold on, yeah. Jensen. Yeah. Before you, now, Bun, it's nice to talk to you again. Bun was a guest on The Sound of Young America
a year or two ago.
But while you, I actually, despite my whiteness, which I do not deny, and despite the fact that I'm wearing a bow tie right now, I am an inner city youth.
Mm-hmm.
I did grow up in an urban environment.
I will give myself that.
The music in my neighborhood was rap music.
Sure. You can claim it. I'm saying I grew up in Calabasas, California. The technical nickname was Cala Blacklist. I had to fight for my music. You know what I mean? Like, I was the only dude that was listening to Bun B as a kid. So.
Hey, Bun, how white are you? You're not throwing anything into this contest.
I am so not white.
No.
There are a lot of things that I am, and I'm very proud of a lot of things that I am, but unfortunately, I am not white.
Well, it's for it. I mean, listen, you don't want to be like us.
Well, let's talk about this great rap song.
Yeah, let's talk about rap. So let's talk about this song, man. I basically threw out a couple people we look up to in hip hop, and we said, what song would you want to sort of break down? You picked this one, which is one of our favorites on the record.
Had to. Well, first of all, I knew you guys could say it, so I knew somebody had to come on.
Thank you. What is this song called, Bun?
This song is called N.I. in Paris.
Thank you. Okay, go ahead. So tell me what you think of the song.
Well, first of all, I think we have to talk about Hit Boy, who's just been really killing hip hop lately. Of course, you know, his relationship with Ye kind of starts with Christmas in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
He produced Christmas in Harlem, and I think a lot of people know him from My God. He produced the My God record. He also produced actually the Lil Wayne and Eminem record.
He did. That's right.
Last year, so the kid's been on a roll. Of course, if people aren't familiar with him, he's from the Surf Club, which is a new production collective, making a lot of noise right now. And, this kid is incredible. You know, he's been making great music and this one is no exception. When I listen to this song, it's kind of like I see where they were going with Ham, what they were trying to create, this kind of like, you know, almost down south type careless, you know, just kind of just going for it type of vibe.
Yeah.
Ham was really close to what they were trying to create, but I think this is a much better example of what they were trying to get at as opposed to Ham.
I agree. And I almost think that one of Ham's distractions is that it's a Lex Luger beat, who I love. I like Lex Luger. But the problem is, when you're trying to make a statement like this song does, Lex Luger beats sound similar.
There's something interesting in what you said, Bun, about that down south vibe. There's that. I mean, obviously there's, you know, some slowed down vocals and stuff like that that are obvious nods towards that direction. Yeah. But tonally, there is something about the there's something about that looseness, that element of kind of fun that has a really interesting contrast with the harshness, electronicness, you know, coldness of a lot of the aesthetic of the record. And in this song, those two things, I think, work really well together. They get both of those things going in a really interesting way. Actually, in kind of a Rick Jamesy kind of way. We were talking about Rick James earlier.
It is a more deliberate record. I mean, if you really look at the delivery of it, it's a very deliberate record. They really want you to just take it for face value, just as it is. Mm-hmm. You know, and believe me, there are the, you know, Murder by Excellence, and there's records on there that they really want you to stop and think and really trying to raise you know, people's awareness about certain things on this album that you normally wouldn't be aware of listening to Jay-Z and Kanye's lyrics. So there is this cultural, sort of significance that they're trying to input into this album. Who's eating?
No, I'm typing. I had an idea.
Okay.
I'm working.
This is important. He's got to write this down. This is the first time in like 3 weeks he's had an idea.
Yeah,
so.
I was like, did I turn off the stove? That's what I typed. No, keep going, man, please.
But no, I think there's a very deliberate, very like, you know, like, hey, man, this is just what we're doing. This is just how we get down. And it's almost like, you know, there's several songs on this album that, you know, they do not apologize for.
No.
You know? And I think
this is a no apologies record.
Absolutely. I think this is a record where, you know, hey, man, this is just how we feel today. You know what I'm saying? It's fun in here today. It's very laid back today, and this record is going to represent that. Again, like I say, there's some very, very strong moments on this record. You know what I'm saying? And then there's a bit of laissez-faire, shall we say, on this album. And I think this is definitely one of them. I think it's the most natural feeling record on the record. I don't think you can feel like it kind of came from them wanting to do this. Okay, on this record, we're going to talk about this. On this record, we're going to make it about this. I think on Niggas in Paris, they were just being niggas in Paris that day.
they were in Paris.
It's a great, something that struck me as I was listening to it is it really is a great premise for a song for these two guys.
Yeah.
I mean, these two guys' personas are tied up not just in who they are, but their relationship to the power structure of the world.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of Jay-Z's sort of Horatio Alger story and his overcharging so-and-sos for the
cold crush problems.
His whole persona is about, even this stuff about the Illuminati and all that stuff, mm-hmm. It's all about his relationship to the world of power that existed before him upending that.
But someone who never was supposed to be in that position.
Exactly.
That's a big deal
exactly.
to Jay-Z, is that he never was supposed to be here, and now he's here, and now he's going to talk about that weirdness of being in it.
Exactly. Right. And Kanye,
not to cut you off, Jay-Z, but also you have to keep in mind that Jay's thing is that, and I'm not leaving. It's not only that he wasn't made it, that he's not leaving, and now there's nothing that the system can do about getting him out of that position.
And there was this thing, I don't know if you remember this, Jensen, because I won't be able to pull the exact quote, but when Kanye first hit with Harder, and there were some questions about how hood Daft Punk samples were, mm-hmm. he said something like, well, I'm one of the beautiful people, and this is the music that the beautiful people listen to, right?
Yeah.
And that's about him. That's about him going even one step further than what Jay said, which is he's doing something that no one in hip hop had ever done before, which is be like, hey, I'm this other kind of thing that you can't even touch.
Yeah.
And whether you like that or not, that's a new and interesting thing. And I think that the theme of this record, of this particular song, is that it's we are these two guys in the place that is the definition of of historical power centers aesthetically.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, you know, that's where Louis Vuitton trunks are made.
Yeah.
Culture, you know what I mean?
A higher culture in general.
Exactly. Exactly. And specifically that portion of higher culture that is as white as can be.
Yes.
But, right.
But,
and obviously we know that Paris is full of black people who make great rap music,
yes.
but conceptually that's what it's about. And so I think that that is a great theme for them because it's really meaty, and just in projecting who they are, which is what both these guys are best at, they get to some stuff.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that they do it without, you know, they try to show that we are kings who still have a sense of what being a pauper was.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally. And there's the second Blades of Glory vocal sample, which you could easily jump over and just laugh at being a Will Ferrell thing, is when it says, "I don't even know what that means. No one does." And he goes, "It doesn't matter. It's provocative." In a weird way, it's a tip of the hat almost to the hate behind Kanye's running in circles. Like, what does it mean? You know, and I almost like, what does it matter? We're creating this stuff. We're the people behind the wheel of this game. And it almost felt that way with this sample, which easily could be forgotten.
And I think it's, we were talking earlier about the idea of a me record versus an us record. And I think that, Bun, you touched on, this is the song on the album that in my mind most brings us along with them.
Yeah, we don't feel as isolated.
Yeah, yeah.
No, this song was always supposed to be the song where, to me, I listen to a lot of the record. There's incredible production on the record.
Yeah,
but sometimes the song itself is so huge that Jay and Ye have to kind of find their way into the beat. I think this was one of the few songs on the album where the music did not get in the way.
Yeah, it's incredible. There's also a lot of memes coming from this song, which is weird. That's the that shit cray.
Yeah.
Instead of crazy is getting said all the time. Also,
I've been saying ball so hard, like, just at random.
Yeah, it's catchy. A lot of things. Also, what's Gucci, what's Louis my killer, what's drugs my dealer is finding itself memeing everywhere.
I just told my wife this. I said, trust me, you're going to be hearing what's Louis, all of this was Gucci, my deal, all of this stuff you're going to be hearing. I'm already hearing it in casual conversation.
Me too, on Twitter as well. And then the other thing that I want to talk about really weird is fish fillet. Kanye has a thing with fish. Between the South Park thing, which gets mentioned later, we'll talk about again. But, I mean, talking about, he asked if a girl ordered fish fillet.
I believe he's talking about cunnilingus.
Is he really?
I think he's.
I didn't catch the reference.
I think if a lady's ordering fish fillet, I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that means that she's requesting cunnilingus.
All right, I'll take it.
I may be mistaken.
It's getting
memeish, but that was my interpretation.
There's a lot of people with him holding fish fillet pictures and stuff. So
I'm trying to understand that one. Like, when a woman orders fish fillet, that means that she wants to be eaten, or, you know, if she
yeah,
wants
I think
to be,
she wants. This is just, hey,
no,
I'm not saying it's clear, Bun.
Yeah. I was under the assumption that if she ordered fish fillet, if you listen to the context of the song and how broad it is, I think it's kind of like, he took her to a nice restaurant.
That's
what
I thought.
She's so good.
He ordered the worst thing on the menu.
Yeah, she ordered like a fish fillet because she's like, that car's crazy. And he's like, what, this old thing? Because obviously it's not even his Benz. It's his other Benz.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, damn, this ain't even the new Benz. This is my other Benz. Bitch, you tripping on this? You order fish fillet? You must not know who you with.
Did you guys know that, I just learned this from this, record, Jay-Z and Kanye West are both very successful and affluent. They have a broad variety of cars.
They have gold. They
They're
have a lot
doing
of gold.
Very well for themselves.
Doing really well.
As it turns out. Who knew?
Yeah, in a recession.
They're able to order better food than fish fillet.
Well, no, they are. It's a good
true.
Point. Bun, we're going to start wrapping up, but one question I want to ask you that sort of means a lot to me. Is this something, if we got you Hit Boys CD, a beat CD, would this have been a beat you picked?
That's a good question. Hold on. Let me say it one more time.
By the way, that's what I was typing. Keep that in mind.
How would you rate this question?
No, I think it's a great beat. It's very difficult for me to say if I would have picked it like that. Mm-hmm. You know, certain people can have the same beats and not have the same end result. You know
exactly.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I was in Paris, maybe.
Yeah, I get
so
that.
I think Hit Boy has music for me. I don't think that would be the particular track for me. Okay.
I could see.
I'd rap to it now after the fact. Shit, yeah, I'd kill it. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, that just goes to the genius of those guys. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have picked I Can't Stop beat either, but they tend to make it work.
Yeah,
you know?
They do.
I wouldn't pick the What You Need James Brown sample.
As soon as you said it, Jensen, I listened in my head to Bun's flow on it, and I was like, yeah, that works.
He would have killed it.
He could have gone back and forth between the double time and the slow flow. I think it would have been great.
He would have killed it. And there's a great changeup around 245 as well. There's a boom bass thing that comes in the song. I can hear him on too.
The question wasn't would I killed it,
because I have that down. That's not a problem.
The question is would I have had I picked it? You know, yeah. Regardless of whether I would have picked it or not, I would have murdered that beat.
I hear you. Well, we have been with Bun B, who is able to not only say the title of the song, but able to dissect it with us. And this is an honor for me. Anytime I'm able to talk directly to one of my rap heroes, it's shocking and it's an amazing honor. So thank you so much, Bun.
A genuine
thank
rap.
You so much. Jesse, I just listened to our interview again, man. It really was a really good interview.
Oh, thank you very much. A genuine rap legend. It's exciting for me to be on a podcast dissecting this record with a rapper who is every bit on the level of these he two really guys. Is. There are very few people on that list.
I know. There really is very few.
But I listened to the podcast. I like the Michael Rappaport one. That was really
good. Michael Rappaport's great, right? So Michael Rappaporty.
He's so funny. Well, thank you so much, Bun, and we'll talk soon. When you're out here in L.A., you're going to have to come down and be on. You're a Kevin Smith fan. You're going to have to be on the Sir Network in person.
You're going to have to bring me better lunch than donut holes.
Right? Good point. Thank you, Bun, so much.
Well, if you guys recording at Kevin's house, I'm sure he's got good food.
It ain't a problem, sir. He can feed you all day. Nice. He's cray, I think.
All
cray.
I got was fish fillet.
That's true. Fish, and that was because you went down.
Pedestrian meal.
Yeah, pedestrian meal. Thank you, Bun.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye, Bun. Well, we spoke to Bun B. That just happened.
Yeah.
About Kanye and Jay-Z.
We're pretty much best friends with him, I'd say.
He's besties. This song is
the single. He's going to be hanging out with us in the treehouse.
He is. We chilling out in my Prius. This song is the single. It's called Otis. It's produced by only Kanye West, but don't forget it has 9 writers, which includes Otis Redding, which is just a sample used in the song. But weirdly, a new trend is saying it's featuring Otis Redding, which I don't know why. But it's a sample of Otis Redding, and this is a song. It's called Otis, and it has a very long intro, guys.
Awesome one, though.
Yeah. Easier to bear.
I invented sweat, popping bottles, putting supermodels in a cab. Proof, I guess I got my swagger back. Truth, new watch alert, new blows. All the big face rolly, I got 2 of those. Arm out the window through the city, I maneuver slow. Cut back, snap back, see my cut through the holes.
Damn, easy and hope, where the hell you been? Niggas talking real reckless, stuck man. I adopted these niggas, put up drumming them. Now I'm about to make them tuck their whole summer in. They say I'm crazy, but I'm about to go dumb again. They ain't see me cause I pulled up in my other bins. Last week I was in my other bins. All your diamonds up.
So good.
Yeah, I love that one.
So good. I don't even really, I almost wanted to end it earlier so people have to go listen to the full version of it. It's so good. That's the closest we're going to get to Boom Bap in 2011.
I feel like I could just go back and forth between listening to that song and listening to Otis Redding sing Try a Little Tenderness live. I think maybe that's from Live in Europe. I'm not sure exactly which album it's from, but there is an amazing live version of that song on Live in Europe. And just back and forth, just one song after another for weeks. Yeah, weeks. I could so have a good CD in my car of those two songs.
I know. It's so good. This is a surprising single pick, even though it's obviously the one we would have picked.
Well,
as
it's
rap
one
fans
of the only good songs on the album.
It's true. It's one of the 6 or 5. This one, I don't necessarily think I would have, if I was the record, I would pick it. Jensen would pick it. Record exec, it's a hip-hop song. There's almost no discernible hook.
Like Death of Auto-Tune, what they did is they took a look at this record. They said, we've got a great song on this record.
Yeah.
And it's a classic street single, but what happened is they tried to put out their hit single and it flopped.
Ham.
And so they're like, I don't trust any of these other songs to be a hit song. I think at this point, maybe they might try N-Words in Paris and see what happens, yeah. or that awful Beyonce song.
No, please no.
But I think that this is the song that stands out on the record. I mean, it is, and it's a street single. I don't think it'll ever be a number one pop song.
No.
But it's fucking jams.
I know, and they're forced to play it at top 40 because it's the single now, and it's caught on. A couple things. I believe Jay-Z sounds most comfortable on this song.
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
This is the one where he's in his pocket. And not only that, this is the Jay-Z we know. This is kind of H to the Izzo Jay-Z that we know. He's able to celebrate. He's the video, which is directed by Spike Jonze, which you should check out, smiling. A Jay-Z we haven't seen in quite some time, of just excitement.
Well, this is the one song where the tone of the album has not curdled.
No.
This is the only song on the whole record, I think, that can genuinely be described as enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the last one is close to there. I enjoy it in the sense that I'm with them and it jams.
Yeah.
But this is a song, this is a celebration.
Yeah.
This song, to go back to Rick James.
Yeah.
And this is, and it is, oh, and it has the amazing thing about that Otis Redding record is that he would do Try a Little Tenderness as the grand finale of his show.
Yeah.
And he would stretch it out to 10, 12, 14 minutes, you know, like this. I think on Live in Europe, it's at least 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
And what it is it's an exercise in building and releasing tension, which is something that much of music is about, but in a real specific way, you know, it's like the connection between music and fucking.
Yeah, I agree.
And Kanye has transformed that. It is not just, he has not just taken it and put it on a track. It has been transformed in this song.
Yeah.
It is a different thing, and it is just as good, which I would never have. I could imagine someone just sampling this great, great song and just taking what's good about it.
Yeah.
Sort of in the way that the Curtis Mayfield sample is towards the end of this
which
album.
Which we'll get to, yeah.
But this is a transformation that works every bit as good in a different way, in a different context, and has the same, that same power of tension and release.
Exactly. Like when Puffy did a song with Jimmy Page, this is the exact opposite.
Yeah.
This is where you take a sample and actually breathe new life into it and create something that almost comes from the same place as the original. And that's super important.
Another amazing thing is, I mean, I think that Jensen, you and I can probably agree that Jay-Z is one of the best rappers, if not the best rapper.
I think he's the best rapper of all time.
And I think that we can both agree that Kanye West has come a long way and is enjoyable to listen to and is one of the greatest producers, if not the greatest producer of all time,
yes.
but probably isn't in the conversation for greatest rapper of all time.
No.
And that's I say that as a big fan of his.
Yeah.
You know, Kanye is every bit as enjoyable. It is amazing to me that he has come so far that he can be on a song like this that's right in Jay's wheelhouse, and he stands up right next to him. He did. Yeah. It does not. You're not like, get me to the next Jay-Z verse.
No. And I think it's funny. One of the things I've noticed on this record is not in the way that he did a record with Linkin Park, but I do believe that this is a collaborative record with Kanye in a sense that he came in and did Kanye songs.
Yeah.
This song, he's on almost the whole time. He's yelling, he's screaming, he's super excited. This is the one he's most stoked at.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I think almost he was like, just put out, you know, put out Otis, man. You know, I almost felt like he was the one saying, this is the one I felt great on. Kanye does do the manana thing, which I don't love. That's the one thing I say on the record, just to be progressive, where he just cuts himself off saying manana long. That's my only gripe. The rest of it is perfect. Aziz in the video felt weird.
I don't know. I was just pretty stoked.
I loved it.
Aziz Ansari is briefly in the video.
Very briefly.
And it's exciting for me and Jensen because we know him slash kind of know him.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's like, hey, there's a guy we know in the Jay-Z Kanye West video, which is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
But
there's a part of me that wishes I'd go back in time to like Human Giant Aziz and be like, hey, listen, in like 3 years, you're going to be around a chopped up Maybach and Jay-Z and Kanye are going to be smiling with you.
But it has that. I think the video is every bit as good as the song. Yeah. And I think that the thing that Spike Jonze brings to his videos that really shines through in that video is this genuine sense of spontaneity. Anything can happen. The organic part of his work that comes, I think, from his work shooting skateboard videos.
Yeah.
I personally, as an inner city resident, don't care for the skateboard, but I can see that there's that quality of ebullience that you do not get in hip hop videos very often.
No.
There's no accidents in most.
Never.
And the fact that Aziz is in there almost and it feels like an accident is to me exemplative of that spirit.
It's
like
urban minimalism.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, here's some, hey, yes, here we go.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's good. Well, this song we can't praise enough. This is the single. You should know about it, and you should listen to it on your own so you don't just hear our small part. We're going to move on to the next song, which is called Gotta Have It. It's produced by a very familiar name in hip-hop, which is the Neptunes. There are 7 writers on this song. Coincidentally, one of them, not Chad Hugo.
Jensen, there's still 10 songs left. Let's get in our bobsleds and head downhill.
Let's do it. This song is called Gotta Have It. Check it out.
Turn my headphones up. Louder.
What you need?
Weird to be
what
weird.
You need? I got what you need. What
this is
you
that
need?
Kid in high school who like wore like what costumes, who like knew they were being weird. It wasn't from their
you
heart.
You mean Pharrell, right?
Assassinate my character. Money matrimony. Yeah, they trying to break the marriage up. Who gonna act phony? Who gonna by the way, James Brown vocal samples are not cheap.
Can't imagine they are. They're not cheap. They got it. They had them on the last one, too.
Yeah.
They closed it out with a little J. They're like, hey, we got it. It's ready. Let's throw in a little JB.
I believe there's another one coming up. This is not the only time they got him. We can cut this one. Listen,
I think I like this one more than you do.
You do. I agree. A lot of people like this song more than I do. I think that it just it's pocket rap, which I love, and they're in the pocket and they sound great and they're awesome. It's just number one, I would have guessed it's a Swizz beat, like a Swizz Beatz beat.
I thought it was a Swizz Beatz beat.
Yeah, that's what I would have guessed. I think it's good. I'm never going to listen to it much.
Can I say one thing about Swizz Beatz?
Yes.
That I promise the next time I was on a rap podcast.
Yes.
Swizz Beatz, if you're out there, my public radio show needs new theme music, and I want it to be by Swizz Beatz. And I want
Showtime.
I want you to yell some different cool Swizz Beatz stuff.
Showtime.
My email is jesse@maximumfun.org. Swizzy, if you're out there, I'm so serious about this.
It'll be great.
You can be the first hip-hop producer ever to do the theme of a public radio program.
Be great.
Let's get back to this song.
Additional vocals again. The mystery additional vocals this time is Kid Cudi. I can't find them. I can't figure out where they are. I don't know if Kid Cudi knows
that's
where
actually
they are.
Kid Cudi doing a James Brown voice.
It's him.
It's I really like this beat. It jams, but I think that what happens is the vocals of this song don't succeed in the way that they do on N-Words in Paris.
Right.
This is a song that feels sour to me.
It does.
The vocals feel sour, and there's something a little bit the parts of this record that don't. I think almost all of this record has at least something that works.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy it overall, but the parts that don't work feel. There's something a little gross about it. There's something a little bit.
Well, the one thing I can say is that this record this record came out the day that the stock market crashed, right? Which is ironic in a sense that this song is just them going back and forth as best friends with a ton of money.
September 1929.
Yeah.
This album came out.
But this it was an old record, but we're just getting into it now.
By the way, you should know that while we do this, we are wearing barrels with straps over our shoulders.
Yeah. I also have no teeth now, which is a bummer. This song, when they talk about money at the rest of the record, especially Otis, which they do talk about their money, and they also destroy a Maybach in the video, I don't feel a little pained hearing it. In this one, I just feel like they're bragging in like a shitty way. I don't like this one. I just don't connect with.
That's that us versus me thing.
Yeah.
They're even in the most ridiculous, when the light hit the ice, it twinkle and glisten. Even that's the highest heights of the bling era. There was this element that it is us, that we have arrived.
Yep.
And this song feels like I am here and I don't know what the fuck to do.
I agree.
The album is about emptiness.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, and I mean, it's an interesting theme for something. But
not this song, though.
Not this song.
I think that the beat doesn't connect with me with the lyrics. The beat's great on its own. Like if this was an A-Rab Music instrumental CD or something, I'd be like, this is hot. Like this would be the one. But not only that, I don't know. I don't think the Neptunes have really connected to me for a while. This didn't stick with me. I'm not going to listen to it a lot.
You know what I like? The Neptunes album.
Clones?
Yeah.
Attack of the Clones? I
really,
do like that.
Really
is that
into
the
that.
One with like a bunch of weird stuff?
How come
on
people
it?
Don't talk about how great that album is?
Hold
it's
on.
Got that great Snoop Dogg like song that sounds like it's from 1984.
And it has a bunch of their pushes towards rock, like high speed scene.
Yeah,
right?
I don't like the rock and roll ones,
but I do
really like, you know what Watch the, I think we can both agree that what Watch the Throne needs is more Roscoe P. Cold Chain.
We all need
that
more.
That guy is awesome.
We need all.
Except
need
for
more.
That he murdered someone. That is bad.
That is a bad.
You
thing.
Shouldn't murder kids.
You know what? It doesn't need though more Ab Liva.
Yeah, that's well. Ab Liva is all right.
No.
Next song, please.
Next song is called New Day. It is produced by the RZA. Which is great from the Wu-Tang, or whatever he calls himself now, in a sense that the Wu-Tang he doesn't even tour with, or movie director, the RZA. It's produced by him, Kanye West, and Mike Dean. This song has 6 writers, in case you're keeping score at home.
Yeah. Me and the RZA connect.
This song I've titled Rich People Problems. It's a new life for me. In order to hear this song, you should really listen to a lot of what Kanye says. So actually listen to his lyrics, which is not always something you do. So this is one.
Yeah. And I'll never let my son have an ego. You'll be nice to everyone wherever we go. I mean, I might even make him be Republican. So everybody know he love white people.
Don't do that.
And I'll never let him leave his college girlfriend and get caught up with the groupies in the whirlwind. And I'll never let him ever hit the telethon. I mean, even the people dying in the world ends. See, I just want him to have an easy life. Not like easy life. Just want him to be someone people like. Don't want it to be hated all the time, judge. Don't be like your daddy that it never was. And I never let him ever hit a strip club. I learned the hard way, there ain't the place to get love. And I never
could have figured that out.
Someone
could have helped using induction.
Yeah. Let's bring it down. So this is a song where they're talking directly to their children. Both Jay-Z and Kanye reference their eventual offspring directly. It's the strongest lyrically for Kanye, which you just heard. How weird his life may be. You can't miss the Amber Rose mention, which is his ex-girlfriend who he was a stripper. She's brought more pain to his life than happiness, which we've seen from Media Takeout or whatever stupid website posts her naked pictures. She's now with Wiz Khalifa, another rapper. His mentions to Amber have been minor, but you know he's talking about her. A slinky beat, very slinky in a sense that RZA, it's almost draping over itself over and over again. I love RZA. I feel like the song is plagued by autotune.
Well, I think that me and the RZA are in the same club, which is when we listen to one of the greatest records by one of the greatest singers of the 20th century, Nina Simone, we think, you know, this needs pitch correction. Right. Let's robot up this a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. My favorite credit on the whole album is on this song, which is, quote, additional creative input by DJ Magnum. one of my favorite hip-hop credits.
Do you know
ever.
Who DJ Magnum is?
I don't. Do you
think that's just a guy they made up?
Yeah, like,
do you
like,
think they're just throwing stuff on there?
I don't know.
How about this? Do you think that with each additional person, they make the pieces smaller, like shareholders? So it's like diluting the stock.
But
actually DJ Magnum is Kanye, so he gets 2 shares.
That's possible. I mean, but I want to hear the law arguments between DJ Magnum and Kanye's lawyers. Like, he gave additional creative input. Like, I don't even know what that means. That just means you walk in and you go, that snare's too high.
Do you think DJ Magnum is walking around like Palm Beach, Florida right now in a t-shirt that says additional creative input by DJ Magnum?
Also a good name for a porno, by the way.
I genuinely love Nina Simone. Like, mm-hmm. Nina Simone and Curtis Mayfield, who we'll hear later, are in my top 5 or maybe even 3 or 2. Mm. They might be my top 2 musical artists of all time, frankly. Right. And, I don't know. There's a weird tone in Kanye's lyrics that I think is underpinning a lot of this record and frankly a lot of what Kanye does in real life, which is fear.
Yeah.
Does it feel scared to you?
It does a bit. I mean, both of them, I mean, Kanye, it's easier for him to talk about his problems. Jay-Z has very little. I mean, he tries to bring up his problems later, which we'll get to, but I can't imagine what his problems are. Your best friend is Gwyneth Paltrow. This is a different life for you. You're living an amazing life. I just think both of them do feel a bit scared, and I like to think that when Jay-Z used to say that Fall Out Boy was his favorite rock band, it was because he was like, white kids like emotions. You know what I mean? And that was that whole emo pop punk thing. And I think this might just be like, let's not forget about those kids. And I don't know. I've heard Jay-Z talk about talking to his kids before. It's not a new thing. he's referenced about the paparazzi and how he's bringing his eventual kid. From the rumors, it's that he can't wait to have a child. But it seems like it's not new territory for either of them.
Yeah.
And this doesn't break new ground.
That is, I mean, one of the things is like, I'm sort of the Jay-Z of podcasting. I never like thought that I would be able to make a living from doing the stuff that I do. And I do, and I make a better living than I ever expected. It's not a big living really, but,
you have gold teeth.
And I think something that you find when you achieve the things that you strive for is you realize, oh shit. Like, all of the chemicals in my brain only react to things relatively.
Yeah.
There are no absolutes in the chemicals in my brain. And so all you have is just, you're just looking around trying to figure out what you can do to strive for something that you will enjoy striving for, and you're making yourself nutty. And I think that that is the place that this record comes from. And it is best, I just don't think they quite are able to connect that in a way that's meaningful. But it's just like that, just like the first song of the record. It's like, if there's no one above you, then you are actually forced to be responsible for yourself. And then what the fuck are you going to do then?
And I think that that's a Kanye problem. I think this is my favorite lyric. This is my favorite lyrically of Kanye. I feel like, Jay-Z added on again. It's not my favorite. I might listen to this song again, which is a good sign considering there's a couple I just will never listen to again. I like the song. It also, something we haven't talked about, to end a lot of the songs, we get a repeating goofy transition, which is almost like, in Alice in Wonderland when you meet the walrus. It's got the like, it's the end of each song, and he brings it back, and that's the John Bryan influence. You talk about Magnolia or like.
So you think Kanye West like looked at this record and he's like, you know what this needs? Leitmotif. I learned that word from John Bryan.
Yeah, I mean, I think he went to Largo.
He plays toy pianos.
Yeah, he went to Largo a couple times and was like, you know what would be good here? Largo.
No disrespect to John Bryan, who is a genuine genius.
Or Largo. No. But there is a goofy transition.
Seriously, fuck Largo.
Yeah, fuck him.
Fuck that small venue in Los Angeles that no one listening to this has heard of.
No. Well, they should. It has some nice great place. Shit going on. Basically, the transition shows up again here. It happens a couple times to let the record connect.
Sort of like in between Seinfeld scenes. Bow,
bow, bow, bow. And a brick wall appears. This next song is my favorite on the record, which is not it's a controversial pick. This song is called That's My Bitch. It's produced by Q-Tip and Kanye West. And get your pencils ready. There are 8 writers.
Hello, can I speak to you know who you are. Look, you had no idea what you're dealing with. Something on something is real as shit. Pop champagne, I give you a sip. About to go dumb, how come? Yeah, that's my bitch. That's my bitch. Show it right there. That's my bitch. That's my bitch. Get your own. It ain't safe in the city, watch the throne. She said, I care more about them Basquions. Basquiat, I'm learning a new word is shot. Blew the world up soon as I hit the club with her. Too short call, told me I fell in love with her. See by actors, ball players, and drug dealers. And some lesbians that never love niggas. Twisted love story.
It's my favorite.
Really?
I know. It's controversial. It's not what anyone's going to say is their favorite. This to me feels the most progressive. Obviously, In Paris is very progressive. This. And I said the one thing about In Paris to me was that Jay sounded a little old. It's not, again, not a big deal to me, but it's just that I felt like it wasn't like Jay-Z was like, you know what sound cool here? That was a Kanye thing. In this record to me, I'm a bigger Jay fan than I am Kanye. He sounds his age. There's a MoMA reference. He references Gagosian. Kanye references Basquiat. This is more, to me, this is the real life they're living. In this case, Kanye sounds like a great influence for Jay-Z.
Interesting.
In the way that maybe H to the Izzo was, it felt like Kanye said, this is going to be great for Jay-Z. Not that this is going to be great for Kanye, or this is going to be great for Kanye and Jay-Z. This was a record to me that was like, progressive, moving him forward, and also not forgetting where he's comfortable.
I like old rappers.
I do.
I will sit around and listen to like recent Scarface records, and you know what I love? And this will make me sound like my music taste stopped in 1998 because these albums were released a few years after that, but really had the aesthetics of 1998.
Sure.
I like the Master Ace albums from the 2000s. I will listen to those.
About No Regrets?
Yeah,
he just talks about how old he is.
He is basically just, all his songs are about how old he is, more or less.
I love that
record. From a perspective that's informed by his oldness.
Dear Diary is a good song if you want to look it up.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I think that I could see you responding to the part where they were scratching something in as though the song was produced by DJ Muggs.
Or Hank Shockley.
Yeah.
I'm just reminding you little parts I love. That's all. Just reminding
you something
parts.
There's something unpleasant about Kanye's tone on this that just, it just rubs me the wrong way, and I can't enjoy the song.
I understand that. This is my fave. Hook by Ellie Jackson of LaRue. A girl named Connie Mitchell shows up. She's from Niki Sound System in Australia.
I also don't like the new thing where female R&B singers, that is completely attributable to Rihanna, although I think you could make an argument for like Reese doing this as well, or that kind of thing, where female R&B singers' voices are defined by how thin and alienated they sound.
I understand.
And how much they sing like a rock and roll person.
I understand. Well,
and I don't enjoy listening to that, so.
For that, you have Justin Vernon. You have Bon Iver to go the other side.
Yeah.
He's also on the hook. There's a James Brown sample in here as well, so if you're slowly have a calculator in front of you, there should be a lot of paper like just railed around you, because these are all expensive samples.
I will say that every time they have like a Bon Iver type guy, like every time I hear about, I do still get a kick out of that every time. I just like the idea of them. Like, I know Zach Galifianakis a little bit.
Yep.
He's been on The Sound of Young America a couple times. He's a real sweet guy. And I just like the idea of them hanging out, especially Jay-Z. Like, I get the feeling that, like, Jay-Z is into the idea of, like, learning about something.
Loves it.
And finding out that it's, like, cool and interesting.
And I hear Solange is his...
I've heard that, too.
I've heard that's the person who tells him. That's Beyonce's sister.
I think that's so neat, you know? Like, he could just go and do his own world, but I think he's really, like, a genuinely curious, interested, engaged guy. I think that's something that you could say very positively about Kanye, too.
This is a rapper Jay-Z has performed with Fish. He's went on stage with Fish before.
Yeah.
He's went to the first Grizzly Bear concert in Brooklyn.
I mean, fucking go for it.
Yeah, he's done
something. I hate Fish, but go for it.
Yeah, please. We're going to keep speeding through because we have another guest near the end that people will be excited by. But I do love that song. I know I'm probably in the minority there, but that's my favorite. This next song is called Welcome to the Jungle. It's produced by Swizz Beatz again. It's co-produced by Mike Dean. Keep this a little lower, four writers. More importantly, another guest I cannot find on this record that is added with additional vocals is a group called Acapella Soul, which upon research seems to be an acapella group that performs outside of the MoMA in New York. their website is under construction, so I can't find much about them, but it sounds like they're street performers. This song is called Welcome to the Jungle.
They tried to get Rockapella.
But Carmen Sandiego stopped them.
Yeah.
More of Jesse's favorite Swizz Beatz.
Yelling different stuff.
Oh. I got a kid. Alicia. I got thin arms. He has very skinny arms.
He's a handsome man, though.
Yeah. Hey.
Welcome to the jungle. Welcome to the jungle, well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to the jungle. Welcome to the jungle, well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I asked her where she wanna be when she's 25. She turned around and looked at me and she said alive. Welcome to the jungle. Welcome.
That one's new to me, so it sounds very profound.
Black axe who rolls, move halves and holes. Come down to the jungle, just ask for hoe. Move blocks and squares, move apples and pears. Work pots and pans, just copy some airs. My uncle died, my daddy did too. Paralyzed by the pain, I could barely move. My nephew gone, my heart is torn. Sometimes I look to the sky, ask why I was born. My faith in God, every day is hard.
Sorry, so, I don't really buy any of that.
I don't buy it either.
I love Jay-Z.
And by the way, I've heard, I mean, and no disrespect, but I've heard about these deaths a lot, and I tend to think that these are the only problems he's having. You know what I mean? Like,
there's something about that song which is, it does, even though it is about these profoundly personal things, that verse specifically, it's about profoundly personal things. It does not feel personal.
Not connected.
It just feels like a list of things on the theme of sad.
Yeah, I agree. Like, what exactly? Almost like, what is sad about me? And he just keeps going back to his very unfortunate tragic death of his nephew.
And there's this part, there's this thing that's missing from almost all of this. Basically, in fact, I'm going to go ahead and say all of this record, which is, there are a lot of attempts at important themes that don't have the specifics, the personal, the voices of these guys. It's just some stuff they thought of.
I would
it
almost
just
argue,
feels like some stuff they thought of.
I agree.
Of.
I would almost argue that it's lacking some experience, which sounds crazy because it's the two most experienced rappers rapping right now. But when you hear Wayne talk about his problems, Wayne is super fucking rich. And when you hear him talk about his problems, I don't feel that disconnect. I feel like he really has some problems.
That's the thing that's missing from their oldness.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, like they're not, and it's not that they're not being revealing enough. It's that they're not using their own real perspectives enough. I think they're still hiding behind just lists of shit on a theme.
I agree. And I think Kanye's getting closer and closer. One of my favorite things is Jay-Z calling himself the Black Axl Rose, which is, this is not the first time he said it, but it makes me think he doesn't know how that story ends.
Or he hasn't heard of any rock guys since 1988.
He's just like, you know what? That guy seemed pretty on top of his shit. Again,
he just writes that down on a piece of paper and like puts it up against the glass to the engineer and says, this is a rock guy, right?
He's better when referencing women's clothing.
Shall we talk about Grizzle Bear?
Grizzle Bear. What about Woo Life? Are they rappers or rockers? Tupac and Michael Jackson mentions in this song, but the one quote that sticks out most to me is a Jay-Z song, Jay-Z lyric, which makes me think this song might be ghostwritten by Morrissey, which is, I'm fucking depressed, no crying in public. I mean, that's insane. That's insane. The world's happiest man is trying to make me understand why he's fucking depressed and he's crying in public. It doesn't make sense.
It's an intense situation.
I don't know.
I don't know what to make of it. It doesn't fly.
I'd love to have sandwiches with Jay-Z though. If he's feeling the pain, I will buy sandwiches. There's a place near Largo that I love. We'll get sandwiches together and we'll talk about it. Cause I don't understand what, and I'm not
you're
just
gonna
saying,
call me, right?
Yeah, I'll call you.
You're not just gonna be like, hey, Jesse. You're not gonna call me afterwards and be like, hey, I just had
sandwiches
with Jay-Z.
No, I'll try at least. What I'm saying is,
when it happens, you're just gonna call Aziz.
I am, because I know
he's already
him. Exactly. I know he's comfortable.
Bullshit.
Well, we'll try. Listen, what we're saying is we're appreciative of them trying this theme. We obviously want them to be more introspective. We want them to try to push hip hop further, but we don't need them to push it. If you have a problem, let it come out. Wayne is a great example of someone who does that. But if you're going to just reach and be like, I'm fucking depressed, I'm crying in public, it's like, really? Because I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
And maybe we're wrong, but the persona you've sold to us doesn't allow us to believe you.
I don't think I've ever bought that from Jay. And Jay may be my favorite rapper, and I'm on board for you saying he's the greatest rapper ever.
Yes.
You know, even his supposed successes. I mean, I remember when everyone was talking about 10 years ago, when everyone was talking about how moving Song Cry is.
I felt Song Cry a little better, but I did feel...
Well, better than this, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The first time he ever talked about his nephew, I did feel it. That wasn't Song Cry. I forget the name of the song.
Yeah.
But when his nephew died in a car crash...
It's like, yeah, no, I feel it. When Beanie Siegel's sad, I feel it, you know?
When he's poor, talking about you making him poor.
When Scarface is sad, I feel it. When Jay's sad, I don't know. It's missing... It feels like... It feels pro forma, you know?
I agree. The song Lost Ones, when he talks about Dame, I felt real... there's sometimes I feel real, but that's just not one of them. Sorry, Jay, I don't think you're crying in public. That's only for me.
You're a super good rapper and seem like a good guy.
You do. That's just not what I believe. We had a transition back to the John Bryan, Walrus, and Alice in Wonderland, and then we got into a song called Who Gon' Stop Me. It's produced by Sham Sack Pace. I probably said it wrong. Sack Pace. Joseph.
ShamWow.
ShamWow is his name. And Kanye West, for those wondering, five writers. The song's called Who Gon' Stop Me. Kind of wish he would, though. Kind of wish he would stop. Okay, stop it there. Okay, stop it on this is something like the Holocaust.
It is like the Holocaust.
It technically is.
Millions of people have been lost.
Millions of Jews and gypsies and Armenians.
Sure.
And twins. Twins had a hard time too.
Twins?
Yeah. They killed twins all the time. He would do experiments. He would shoot one to see if the other one had pain.
Oh.
It's a thing. He hated twins.
What happened?
Well, they were really pained.
Yeah.
Which we all know now.
Good news is now I don't have to go out and start shooting twins. That was next on my list.
He did get that out of the way.
I was starting slow by shooting VHS copies of Twins.
And that had no consequences.
Yeah.
This song is to me like the Holocaust because I don't want to remember it. This is forgettable. It's cemented in forgettable by Kanye using pig Latin in his first verse, which will never allow you to have a classic. I highly doubt anyone will be listening to this in 3 weeks, let alone 3 months or 3 years.
Do you think we should go out and start a project, a show-alike project, right, where we gather testimonials of people who lived through listening to this song so that people will not forget this song?
We should open a museum for people who've listened to this song.
Because I think kids who are out there right now, they're 5 years old, they're not allowed to listen to rap music yet. In 10 years, they won't know what we had to go through when we listened to this boring song.
They won't know.
Had that Holocaust.
They'll see my tattoo,
yeah,
but they won't know what it's about.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
You got a tattoo of the name of this song.
I did, with the number under it. Just one. Just the number one.
Yeah.
This song, again, I hate it. It's a mess. It feels like they went to a dubstep show or saw Fool's Gold perform. And we're like, let's do it. And there's just a lot of dance shit in it. And it's just over the top. And it fits on LA radio. That's the bad news good news.
So much dance music on the rap station.
Yeah, it's so bad. I barely got through it. I can't get through it. I don't even want to talk much about it unless you have a lot to say.
No, next song, please.
All right. So this next song is called Made in America.
Got any saltines? I need to cleanse my palate.
this is the ginger of sushi we need right now. It's called Murder to this one's called Murder to Excellence. Yeah, sorry. I was so drawn back by being part of the Holocaust. It's produced by Swizz Beatz. This one, kids, more than a baseball field, has 12 writers. You could add up all the infielders, outfielders,
that's
catchers.
More than a football team.
That is. It's 12 writers. Additional vocals include Kid Cudi. And here we go.
Bloody murder. Bloody murder. Murder, murder, murder.
Murder, murder.
Murder.
If you don't know, the song is called Murder to Excellence. If you don't know by this point.
Murder.
Papery murder.
He knows so many singers he could call. He knows so many singers.
Yeah.
He probably knows 50 to 100 singers.
Seal was already just hanging out.
Seal was hanging out. Unbelievable.
Do we need to listen to any more?
That's fine. You can turn on. I don't hate the song as much as I hate other ones, but this I just don't need to listen
to. Okay, here's the thing about this song for me. I was listening to the song in the car on the way, and I actually think that this is kind of a beautiful and compelling beat.
Yes. Best part of the song.
And the lyrics of this song, it's like these themes were cliched in 1992.
Yeah, it's the worst Da Vinci Code.
There is just so, they have bring nothing to the topic.
Nothing.
And Bun was giving them credit for tackling an important issue and raising awareness. But it's kind of like if you're wearing a pink ribbon, it's like, yes, I am aware of breast cancer.
It's like when Obama said not to wear the flag. I agree. He's like, I don't need to wear it. People love it. And it seems just makes no sense here.
It's like writing a song about loving your mom. Like, it's great. I love your mom. But unless you're going to be like that loving your mom song in the last E-40 song album that has all this weird, really specific, awesome, great stuff about his mom on it.
Right.
Then like there's this part where he says how he loves her because he buys her a ticket to the casino on the bus.
I have to hear this.
Oh, it's great. It's a great song. But without anything like that, they have to bring something. They can't just be like, well, we got to make one of those songs.
That's what it was.
This is like, it's like Gangsta's Paradise. You know, it's that song. It's just like, oh, things are hard and we're killing each other.
Right.
It's killing each other is bad. And we're going to say murder a lot.
Yeah, this is the street liftoff.
And I want you to know that I am not in support of black-on-black murder.
Neither am I.
Or any murder.
I'm in some.
You're in favor of some murder.
Some.
Like maybe an Augusto Pinochet.
Well, Casey Anthony, revenge murder.
Sure.
There are some things I can get behind.
Okay.
Entourage creators. I'm not saying that I would want their murder, but I'm saying I would be like,
I heard that guy on the treatment with Elvis Mitchell. He did not seem like a class act.
Oh, no. He's from the Ratner School of people. this song, again, somewhat forgettable. I can't decipher anything they're talking about.
But a beautiful beat. I'm surprised to hear that Swizzy produced it.
I put that down. Does not feel like
signature
Swizz.
That's why he's at the top of my fucking list for producing a theme music for The Sound of Young America. I'm serious about it. Jesse at MaximumFun.org. Also, this offer is also open to Manny Fresh.
Which I would love to do. This is, again, just Swizz beats. There is a great beat switch as well halfway through the song. Again, we have nothing wrong with the beat. I just feel like a reach vocally, and they just don't have anything. This next song, we're going to have some special guests come in for this one. This one is called Made in America. It's featuring Frank Ocean again from the Odd Future Collective, again by Sack Pace. If I'm saying his name wrong, I'm wrong. Four writers, additional production by Mike Dean.
And I'll bring you out the darkness. Sweet King Martin. Sweet Queen Coretta, sweet Brother Malcolm, sweet Queen Betty, sweet Mother Mary, sweet Father Joseph, sweet Jesus. We made it in America, sweet baby Jesus.
He's sweet. He grew up to be Jesus.
I mean, you can't be not sweet and be Jesus. You'll have to take our word that they rap.
Yeah.
Because they do.
Frank Ocean has a beautiful voice, doesn't he?
He does. I do love Frank Ocean, and that's what does keep this song afloat to me, because I don't love it. I mean, it seems to be some sort of love letter. It's got a life...
What is this song, Jensen? You seem so much less perturbed by this song than I am.
Really? I'm not that... I'm
the chorus is him singing a list that goes from the greatest heroes of the civil rights movement to the greatest heroes of the biggest religion in the Western world.
I told you,
they just rap about how they used to be poor and now they're not.
There's the craziest part. I will give you this. This song is a love letter to a lot of people, black icons, also Sweet Baby Jesus, but
not the verses.
I know, but I'm about to say the verse has a reference to South Park making fun of Kanye. Listen, we need some guests in this.
You know what this is like? A Holocaust. Get some guests on.
These guests are people you might know if you followed me in the past. If you're a hip-hop nerd, you've been asking for it for weeks. This is the reunion of Hype Man. Please welcome Jeff and Eric Rosenthal.
Hey!
The most celebratory people we could bring into this podcast. If you don't know, these brothers, Eric and Jeff Rosenthal, are from itsthereal.com. You can see them on The Clutch over at MTV. But on top of that, Jeff, Eric, and I had a podcast called Hype Men where we did this sort of thing all the time. We had Jesse on as a guest. We basically broke down hip-hop and dissected it, and we couldn't do something like this without bringing back the Hype Men and bringing one of our favorite guests, Jesse Thorne, into the mix. We've went through every song, Jeff and Eric. We are now at the one that you chose, which is called Made in America.
Wait, so Jensen, this whole show is about you, like, putting people on to new stuff, right?
It is.
So we are here to introduce everyone to Jay-Z and Kanye West?
We are. No, this is a special... I talked about it. This is a special episode. You just weren't around. It's a special episode where we take something that's extremely water cooler, extremely pop, and we break it down. We dissect it. We show you all the parts. That's
and he's
all.
He's been teasing you guys' appearance on this thing. We already had a producer from the album and one of the greatest rappers ever on the show.
Yeah.
And he's been saying, and we've got some guests you'll really... excited about.
Because everything revolves around my life, Jesse. We know this by now. These are two of my friends.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mom.
Yeah, I mean, literally, we're going to bring in my third grade teacher after this to talk about the last song. Guys, this is the song you picked.
Yes.
Jesse and I have admitted before you got on the air that we are a bit disturbed by this song in the difference between hook and lyrics. You tell us, why did you pick this song?
I think that this is the song that really ties the whole album together. I think it is the epitome of this album. Because this whole album is about Jay-Z and Kanye West. What?
Wait, why is Jensen giggling?
I did not giggle. That was
me giggling. Don't
why is Jesse giggling?
Sorry, it's a very serious song. I know. Sorry.
No,
excuse
it
me.
Is.
It's
it
about
is.
Important themes with a capital T and an I, capital I.
No, I think this album is our nation as described through the eyes of Kanye and Jay-Z, two of the most powerful men in the country. Both of whom are African American and both of whom are in hip hop. And I think this song is each of their stories and how they've made it to be successful and impactful Jay through selling drugs, Kanye through being a music producer who dropped out of college. And they aspire to mean something to America, much like Martin Luther King, much like Coretta Scott King, Malcolm X, Eddie.
My only problem. Listen, we've a lot of praise for this record. This is not all just negative.
You're cutting them off before they get to the punchline.
All right.
I presume there's a punchline. That was just a straight line, right?
Listen, Eric, I'm just saying, don't you think that when you bring up such large icons and then you say baby Jesus, don't you think that maybe it's a little hard to then reference when South Park made fun of you?
Not even regular Jesus. They went all the way back to baby for maximum, you know, positive vibes.
Yeah.
Jesse just wants to hear a Mr. Fab and Mac Dre collaboration.
He does do. He does want that.
That would be great. They're actually credited vocalists on a couple of these songs.
We can't find them, just like every other credited vocalist. Jeff, I want to hear from you. Why are we laughing at this? And you guys are taking it serious?
Are you really taking it serious?
Wait, let them answer. Yes. Let them answer. Let Jeff
answer. Really?
Let Jeff answer. Okay.
No, I think that you know, these are two guys who are certainly black icons. And I think that for them to be successful and for them to be role models in this day and age, I think it's very important. I think people look at them as,
sort of baby Jesus-like figures.
No. But listen, how about the fact that this is actually an album with two guys who are actually telling the truth? And they're not old people trying to sound young. It's not like LL Cool J.
Basically, Jeff and Eric have went against everything I've said about this record.
I'm still waiting for the punchline. I am so flabbergasted. Do you know these guys better than I do?
I know them very well.
I'm
surprised. I mean, I'll tell you one thing about Jeff and Eric. I'll tell you. They do like origin rap. And I've noticed that before. Like, they do like Kanye because he talks about his story in his past.
They cried a lot when they watched Rudy.
Yeah, like, no, I cried a lot during Rudy.
I'm just glad I finally got to hear the story of Jay-Z and Kanye. I feel like over the past 10 years, I've never gotten to hear their story. And so I'm finally glad. And in this context, too, that really helps me understand how they're, in a way, not just civil rights leaders.
But baby Jesus.
But the saviors of humankind.
No, I mean, like, I don't think that they certainly do not underestimate their own story.
Never. I mean, they never will.
But I'm just saying that I think that when people look at them as the new black icons, I don't think that is a wrong thing for them to sort of accept. You don't think that these guys are more the face of black America to today's youth than...
Hey, look, if they were saying they're the new Joe Louis, if they were saying they're the new Joe Louis,
I'll even give them Ali.
Ali. Ali's a really good one. Ali's a good one.
You know what? I don't know that they're comparing themselves to any of these people. I don't think they're comparing themselves to Martin Luther King or Malcolm X or anything.
It's just a coincidence that's on the chorus of the song.
I think that they are...
like many songs on this album, the chorus and the verses are unrelated.
I think that they are saying that they are those people's dreams realized.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to say that they have American dreams and they've made it, and that's what this whole album is about.
Just like Mary Joseph and the baby Jesus.
Hey, listen, I'm going to say this.
In America, religion takes on such a different, and you know this.
Well,
guys.
for them especially Kanye.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and religion is so different in America than it is elsewhere in the world. So I think it's their view on what is the American dream.
Yeah, no, I think that it's a colorless sort of, equality. And I think that success is it knows no bounds.
I'm an atheist, and I was offended by the baby Jesus part.
Oh, no, I mean, like, I'm Jewish, and I don't care about any of this stuff.
Listen, Jeff.
You don't even like rap music.
Jay-Z's verse, I don't like Jay-Z's verse just on an aesthetic basis. I think
you don't like the grunting every two bars?
No, I can't stand that ad lib. I mean, I love that ad lib when I'm joking about it, but in real life, I don't love that ad lib. I also think that Kanye bringing up South Park in a song that talks about baby Jesus feels like that time in The Simpsons when Lisa is yelling Daryl, Daryl over and over to Strawberry, and the mom goes, "Stop it!" And Lisa goes, "No, he's a professional. He hears this all the time. This doesn't bother him." And then it cuts to Daryl, and he's crying. It just feels like he's like, "Why does she keep saying that?"
You know what? Reminds me of, it's as though Jay-Z and Kanye West were given some nerve tonic. and their heads grew enormous, just like Ken Griffey Jr.'s in that
reference.
Same episode, to the point where you can't believe how big their heads are, and they're suddenly comparing their efforts to that of the baby Jesus and his parents.
I feel that way too, Jeff.
And it's just the other thing about this is, like much of the rest, there's no part of this that is surprisingly artfully told or that I haven't heard before. There's no part of their lyrics that I'm like, oh, that's an interesting facet of this tale that I haven't heard. This is a story that I know told artlessly.
All right, Jeff and Eric, your rebuttal. Go ahead.
I'm actually surprised, knowing Jensen so well, that Jensen doesn't like this, being that this is a concept album.
I do like a lot of it. I like five songs probably a lot, and I love a lot of the concepts. But I think that you're giving too much credit to that concept having a full thread.
Watch the video.
Aziz thing?
No. Aziz. Aziz is America incarnate. No, the big American flag in the back, and I think
that's also what Kid Rock does.
No. Well, I think that if we're overstating
I don't think you're giving enough credit to Kid Rock.
What is it, Jeff?
I think that if we're overstating the importance of Jay and Kanye, I think that you guys are taking the entirely negative view.
We like a lot of the songs. We really do. You'll hear it back.
But I think that you guys are exaggerating how it's not like when Kanye drops out of art school, he's comparing himself to like marching in the streets of Birmingham. You know, like
right.
I don't think that I think that it's their dreams realized rather than them saying we are the new Martin Luther King. They're not solving racial equality. They are
the
post-racial. If there is such a thing as post-racialism, this is the post-racial reality of today.
It's a different way of saying that they are like Jeff said, the face of today's.
Okay, I'll give you
success.
This. I'll give you
success,
this.
Yeah.
I'll give you
Black
this.
Success.
I'll give you this. When I first started to hear about Richard Poe and all these people and the drug dealers they looked up to and BMF and all these things, and I heard how it was, you got to look at it as more than drug dealing. You have to look at it as their only way out. And it was a story that was being told over the past decade in hip hop, which is like, these were who we looked up to. You had these icons. We had these people in our neighborhood. And I got over that hurdle. You know, it wasn't drug dealing. They could have been into anything. It's just, that's what the streets looked up to. This song feels like those people bragging. Like it feels like though it almost feels like they said, we are the icons. Thank you. Like it almost felt like they were, it's almost like watching the Oscars for like 5 hours in a row or, you know, five times in a row. It's just a lot of self congratulations. And to say it with Jesus's name, it just felt douchey.
To me, it's them just saying, this is how I really actually made it, because that's true. Kanye is who he is, and he made it in the way he said. He said, look, I dropped out of college. My mom introduced me to No ID. It all put me in a good place. It put her in a better place. And I was off to living my dreams of being a producer for Jay-Z and making clothes with my friends.
Why would you put those stories in the context of civil rights leaders and Jesus rather than say, if the chorus of this song was Thomas Jefferson and J.P. Morgan and
yeah, but all
Donald
those guys
Trump
own slaves.
What'd you say?
I said all those guys own slaves.
They did. Good point.
Why do you put them in the context? Why do you put a story that is about? Is it not distasteful to put a story that is essentially about
your own success,
material success?
Agreed.
In the context of two groups of people who are known for rejecting material success, for being about something that transcends material success, and there's no content in this song about that. I mean, these guys have done some of that stuff, but
guys,
there's nothing about art
guys,
in
you,
the song even.
You act like you've never seen a Jesus piece before.
We haven't. You're right. It's not in person, at least.
But material success, there's nothing more American than that. And I think that it is absolutely correct for them to, yeah.
Come in, flaunt it.
when we all make it, we're gonna get big diamond encrusted crucifixes, right?
But mine, yes. I'm just gonna name myself Baby Jesus. I'm gonna be like ODB. Like I don't even want you to call me my normal name. I need to be compared to Loretta. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't think that what these people in the chorus share is that they're all black icons. I don't buy that. I don't buy that they're icons of America. I mean, like, if they were black icons, as I said, it could have been Joe Louis.
Sure.
If it were American icons, it could have been
the Wright brothers.
It could have been, you know, Amelia Earhart. Right. You know what I mean? But
we like flying, obviously.
What these are people who the people in the chorus are about something that is much more profound, much deeper than what Jay and Kanye are about. And I say
or
that
about
as someone,
in the song, even give it back in yeah. the song. Maybe they could have been. I believe Jay-Z and Kanye have the ability to do something amazing, and they have, but even more amazing with their lives.
And I think that they could, you know, I mentioned how much I love Curtis Mayfield, and he's on one of the bonus tracks. And I think that they could. One of the magical things about Curtis Mayfield is he is able to talk about absurdly large things, you know, absurdly high dreams and goals, you know, God and justice and things like that in a very humble and humane way that can be about him.
Yeah.
And they don't do that at all.
No.
Zero. Zero out of 10.
Yeah. I don't argue that point. I think that, you know, I think that there are certainly more tasteful ways to do it. And I think that to compare Martin Luther King and Jay-Z, and if you were to look at it that way, I think that would be, inherently wrong. But I think that, you know, I'm not comparing them. I'm comparing the realization of, yeah, the play. Yeah,
so the theme is sort of, in your estimation, it's like Jay-Z and Kanye, Martin Luther King and, Baby Jesus were very successful.
No, I think that this is what Martin Luther King wanted. The ability
for to have gold bottom teeth.
He wanted blow. He just wanted the fucking blow. Give me the blow. Give me the strippers.
give me the strippers. He wanted the private jet. We know that now.
PJs. Listen. No, I think he wanted, you know, blacks to be able to be successful.
Right. And this is just their road to success.
But
this
did it have to be so decadent?
They
in
could,
the song,
they could have
saying.
Said once in the song, thank you to those people for giving me the chance to be this.
That's fair.
They could have said that in one word. Yeah. You know, they could have thrown that in, and then the song is about these people blaze the trail for me. Song is about we are together in a group.
Well, but they, I'm sure that they see the chorus as essentially what Jay-Z said when he did, My President is Black, when he said, you know, we went from walking to running to flying.
Yeah,
right?
But that's so
the
obvious.
Problem with this album. There is no we in this album. We talked about that earlier. There's no we in this album. It's all, and these are both guys who I think have done great with we. You know, I think early in Kanye's career, he was absolutely a we guy.
An underdog.
And, you know, Jay-Z has made a career out of being we, of being,
from
you
the
know,
projects.
And there's none of that here. This is a me, me, me.
No.
But there are two me's on that throne.
It's me,
which
me.
It takes a week.
Good point.
Point taken.
Touche. Jeff and Eric Rosenthal, two of my best friends in the world. You could check them out at It's The Real, at It's The Real on Twitter.
Two of my best friends, too, although that says more about my friends.
You're not that close.
Friends.
Exactly.
I've only met these guys on Skype.
Jesse, we're best Facebook friends.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Jeff and Eric, you could see them on The Clutch over at MTV.com. Who, you guys have someone coming up you've interviewed recently?
Yeah, this guy named Travis Rice, who's a big snowboarder and has a really awesome movie called, what is it, like Up in the Air, something like that?
No, it's the
starring Zach Galifianakis.
Oh,
it's called Out Cold.
Well, guys, I'm so happy to have you on, and the streets have been asking for the it's the real Jensen reunion.
Yeah, we always walk up and down 125th Street, and everybody's always like, "Where is Hype Man?"
They're like, "Where's Hype Man? Where? What happened?" Everybody's asking.
I actually just got a text from a mixtape rapper Papoose, wondering. He's like,
"Papoose." We call him Papoose on Hype Man. We're like, I can't say his name, so it just goes as Papoose.
Those guys, he said. As the streets are buzzing, where's the hype man?
Well, we're back, and we did it for this. And Jeff and Eric, thank you for coming into the Lion's Den for this song, because Jesse and I don't dig it, and we appreciate you fighting for it. So I love you dudes, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah,
all right,
guys.
All right, see ya.
If you guys hadn't been here, this would have been like a holocaust.
That's the other song. All right, bye guys.
Bye.
All right, well, thanks Jeff and Eric. This is our last song, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it. We've been with you for a while. This song is called Why I Love You, and it's featuring Mr. Hudson. We're not going to do the fucking bonus tracks because you should do those on your own.
And they're pretty weak
sauce.
They're
weak sauce. Why I Love You featuring Mr. Hudson. It's produced by Mike Dean and Kanye West. And for that last feeling, remember, there are seven writers. But why?
If you will, that the phone's burning, Rome's burning, and I'm sitting in the corner all alone burning. Why does it always end up like this? Something that we don't determine. Same people that I fought for, that I fight for, that I ride for, that I live for, that I die for. Be the reason that these niggas is alive for.
Now, they want me dead. I can't hang. I couldn't even sit through it.
You remember when, like, big bombastic rap music was kind of exciting? Like, I remember the first time I heard Welcome to New York City by Cam'ron.
Oh, I love that song.
I would get so pumped by
I
that
know.
Song.
Me
I would get
too.
So excited. Or those. All those Just Blaze songs that had like
Breathe,
drum fills.
Breathe
yeah.
by Fab.
Just
Breathe.
Just
or...
where you'd be like, wait a minute, he programmed one drum thing and then there's a.
New York, New York, Ja Rule featuring all those dudes. I mean, all those big records, and they do it a lot on this song, on this whole album, but it just doesn't connect every time. And this is a song to me that forced that. This is the exact example of what forced that early reaction from the audience. It's gotten better and people, the album has grown on people, but this song itself is just, it's not impressive compared to what these guys have done on their own.
And I think that my, like, aggressive criticisms of certain missteps on this record may lead you to suggest that it hasn't been playing in my car a lot the last 2 weeks, but it's, I mean, it really is, there really is a sense that while even the worst moments are carried by the fact that these are the two of the most talented performers in hip hop, and they're working with some of the most talented collaborators in the world. I mean, they're carried by their charisma and talent to some extent. There's just a lot of stuff where it's just like, I don't know, here's some different stuff.
Yeah. And let's put it all together.
Yeah.
I agree. And you listen, like I said, we do like this record. It's not that we listen to it and just trash it. I mean, this is a step in the right direction. We can all agree to that. It's a step in the right direction for hip hop. We obviously want you to come up with your own opinions. Listen to the record if you haven't. I feel
speak
like,
for yourself. I want you to just have my opinion.
That's a good point. That's because he thinks he's baby Jesus.
Yeah.
Guys, thank you guys so much. We have dissected this record from front to end. I want to thank my guest and one of my favorite people on earth, Jesse Thorne. One of my favorite analytical human beings. And you know, this was a little different for us. So
top
it was
10?
Obviously
in my top 10,
top 8 on MySpace.
Yes.
I would say that this is something we're going to do maybe in the future, but if you like it, tell me. If you don't, you could check it out on smodcast.com or on iTunes. If you feel like you want to rate and review it, go ahead. And you can follow the show at Get Up on Jensen or myself at Jensen Clan 88. That's with a C because I'm not racist. Jesse, how can they follow you?
MaximumFun.org. You can find all of our shows or Jordan Jesse Go, Sound of Young America, Judge John Hodgman, and iTunes. And if you want advice on wearing bow ties, you can always visit putthison.com. Well, 6 hours well spent, huh,
Jensen? 6 hours. We did a good job. I mean, this is what they tell Billy Crystal to do for the Oscars, I think. They go, just go out there and wing it. And then 10 hours later, he's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. We'll be back next week with a live show. We will be with actress Jenny Molin, who is by far one of the craziest people I know. And you'll learn more about her then. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to Get Up on This with Jensen Karp, a production of Smodcast Internet Radio. Be a social media whore and follow at JensenClan88 and at GetUpOnJensen on Twitter. Or, if you're old school, email GetUpOnJensen@gmail.com. See you next Tuesday, amigo.